welcome to Fate Moon Archive, the best and only podcast about waiting through 20 years of the digital sea. I'm your host, Fen. My pronouns are Fayfair, and joining me is...
I'm Ben Enns. My pronouns are she, they.
Today, we begin a new era as we start Fate Extra CCC. But first, we have some tea to sip and some experimental Japanese cinema to talk about. It's Yuri Tea Time. The tea, unfortunately...
Was bad.
Or, I screwed the pooch on it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
I used too little leaf at first, and then I put too much in, and the water started too hot, I think. It was a doomed venture from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, I got, I don't know, maybe one pour where I was like, okay, this is like all right. And then the rest were just overwhelmed by bitterness. Really no other flavor there.
Yeah.
And I felt really bad.
You know, I was like I tried it and I, my tea curious wife tried it and she made such a face when she took a sip.
No, again, yes, I tried it and was like,
it was all,
I don't know that, I don't know that I should even offer this to Ben, but I did. And that was, I don't know if it was a mistake, but, it was not tea fit for consumption. Unless, like, I guess what you want from tea is just bitterness, but that's not it.
Now,
I like a
on
bitter
the other
tea.
Hand, your Guylon pouring, masterful today.
Yeah,
didn't burn yourself at all.
Yeah,
I didn't see you go. Ah.
Yes,
you did burn me.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. We're moving.
Yeah.
So that means there's lots of packed up boxes all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Which means there's not a lot of space in the kitchen.
Yes.
Also, the teapot is in a bad spot compared to where I sit.
Yes.
So Fen has to kind of work around me. This is my fault.
If I was left-handed, wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
I am unfortunately not left-handed.
Now, the problem was that... the proximity was my fault. The problem was that Fen was picking up and the hot teapot and pouring it directly next to my bare exposed upper arm. Without saying anything. So every time I noticed Fen doing this, I would lean away subtly so that I didn't get burned. And I was like, I'm being silly. That's fine. But, and yet I feel like something will happen if I don't. And I didn't lean away and Fen immediately burned me.
I'm so sorry.
These things happen.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
It was pretty funny. It's a good story.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, the tea was bad, but...
yeah,
maybe next week.
There's always next week. There's always more tea to be had.
Really, the thing is, Ben wants me to wait to get a teapot until we move, and that's the correct move. I know.
Okay.
But I have some delicious looking green tea just sitting in the cupboard that's just like begging for a new teapot, and I'm like, Ben,
we can compromise.
Yes,
you can get a new teapot.
Yes.
And send it to the new place. And you can't use it until we go.
Yeah. Yes. That, you're correct. That is the correct thing to do. I should probably send over my teaware, like pack that up and send that over at some point soon. So
yeah, we need to send our stuff, our fragile stuff early, like our anime girl figurines and your teapots.
Our next episode we're going to be recording in the new place.
Yeah, we might have to take another week to get set up. So it's a good thing we caught up on this.
Yes, we should message whoever, but...
Because setting up the entire studio in, like, 2 days, or in a couple of days, or whatever it is...
That's fair.
It's gonna be tricky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with the moving and everything, yeah, it's probably makes sense to...
Okay. We are entering a new era of Fate stuff, but... First, let's talk about some movies.
Yeah. Alongside, we've been planning this for a while at this point. It was doing Tsubihibi and TNS alongside Apocrypha.
Yes.
That got us to be like, oh, well, we should... Okay. CCC is going to be good. I know this.
Yeah.
I have played it. So we didn't need... something that was like a heavy lift and could carry an episode the way that we needed something alongside Apocrypha.
We really did need something. We overbaked it a little bit, but we're pulling it back now. We've learned a lot from... Every time we make a mistake, we learn a lot from it. And then we don't necessarily fix it, but we do tweak things.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah. Yeah. Those episodes were too long. I realize that.
They were too long.
They were largely too long because of Tsubihibe.
Oh, yes. Yeah, certainly. Certainly. I think...
And TNS.
Yeah. Apocrypha episodes being like... If you cut out Tsubihibe, Apocrypha being an hour or so, or an hour too long, people are like, what do you have to talk about in Apocrypha? And I'm like, lots. It's a book. There's plenty to talk about.
Yeah.
Whether it's like good, you know, that's different than is there stuff to discuss when we go over everything with such a fine tooth comb.
Yes.
That's just the nature of the pod.
But
we crammed too much Tsubihibe in too tight a space. This has been talked about before.
Yes.
It was an interesting experience. It made me more insane, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me plus 20 insanity points, I think.
Mm-hmm. But what it also did was we kind of want to do that going forward. Keep doing that.
go more insane?
Yes, but in a more healthy way.
Okay, yes.
So alongside CCC, we're doing a series of movies.
Yes.
We had a list of like 20-something, and we only have... Yeah. 10 CCC episodes? 9? 9. 7, 8, yes. 9 CCC episodes. And so we had a sit down at some point, and we're like, okay, we have to trim this list down. And it turned out quite hard. We did fit 10 movies on this 9 episode list.
We should have put the entire Gregor Rocky Apocalypse trilogy. Or whatever it's called, the Doom Generation, all that. We should have done that for an episode, but I don't think we did, right?
No.
Damn.
We could do it in the future.
We definitely will. We definitely will.
I have a list of movies to watch for Pod as a potential, like, you know, we should maybe do this at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so, today.
Yes.
Starting with first movie, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in our hearts, because I haven't seen any of the rest of the movies we're watching for this segment, but definitely a great movie. Throw away your books, Rally in the Streets.
Pastoral to Die in the Country was on my list of movies for CCC, but we did end up watching it on a whim a couple of weeks ago. We discussed it on Pod.
Yes. Okay.
So we ended up with Rally in the Streets, which is an interesting movie. Do you like it more than Pastoral?
Right. Two things. I think this got cut as well. Continuing the trend of me watching classic cinema because an anime referenced it.
Yes.
Gakuen Utopia might not be straight. There's a bit where the main character says, as a famous person once said, throw your books, Rally in the Streets.
That's pretty funny.
Okay. Movie directed, 1971 film, directed by Shuji Teriyama, who also directed Pastoral, which is why Ben brought up Pastoral.
Yes.
Not a non sequitur, a sequitur.
A sequitur. I'm sequituring over here.
A related film. Okay. What a great movie.
Yeah.
I think, in some ways, I like Pastoral more.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think it is going to be hard not to talk about both films.
Yeah.
In this segment. Because we watched Pastoral a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, like a month.
I think it was a month ago. And we watched this right before sitting down. Because I was too sleepy last night.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we waited. Because I'm glad that I was like fully aware and awake for this. As opposed to kind of drifting off. Okay. What an opening, first off.
Rally in the Streets is his first feature-length movie, right?
First feature-length film.
Yes.
Yes.
What's his name again?
Shuji Teriyama.
Really interesting director.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What a... Yes. Really, really fun. Both of his films that I have seen, I have adored.
Yes.
This is... Okay.
What is this movie about, Sean?
Materialism? Like, okay, first off, This is a movie, book, and play that he wrote.
Uh-huh.
It is such a movie that I'm like, okay, what does the play look like? Right? Like, there are pieces of it that I could see replicated in a book. You could have all the classified ads, the like missed connections bit, or like, yeah, looking for friends, looking for husband, looking for my missing wife.
Looking for young twinks tied up.
Yeah. You could like do stuff like that in a book that is like, okay, well, or there are pieces of this that I could see done in a play.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of turning to the camera, which I assume at least in some part comes from the play. Film opens saying with a like, okay, here's who it's by. And then just a black screen with like a couple of moments of noise for a minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I had almost gotten to the point of like, do we need to like skip ahead and see if this is working right? Like, is this just us, or
this was a fun like consequence of watching it during the daytime, because there was like light being cast on the screen by windows around it, and so I was like, is there like light moving on the screen? Is it like smoke or something? I can't actually tell, which is really funny.
And then,
I believe it was like just a dark screen.
Mm-hmm.
But like I was sitting there trying to piece out whether or not something was actually occurring that I just couldn't make out because of the slightly subpar like lighting situation in the room we were watching.
Mm-hmm. And then we get a guy shows up and is like, what are you doing just sitting there?
This is a great monologue.
Incredible monologue.
Great opening.
It's such a fun mix. It is both a like talking to the cinema goer as a like, listen, if you just sit there, like the movie's not going to start. It's just a black screen. Like, what were you doing just sitting there? And it is a like,
you fucking idiot. Why would you think that there would be a movie at the movie theater?
And more general, like, your complacency has led Japan to where it is. You sitting around is not going to change culture. Throw away your movies, go out, protest, like join a leftist movement, something about Japan in a way that, yes, yeah. And then, yeah, the bit where he talks about like one first, He said, like, you know, go ahead, put your hand on the girl next to you's knee. Both Ben and I did this. But then he talks about, like, oh, yeah, you went and saw this, like, boxing movie. And I bet you, like, swaggered out of there because you thought you were so cool. I cried. it made me despair at the situation.
Yes, this is a movie that is... It's about America. It's about youth, like social malaise and political disaffection. You know what I mean? It's about sexual dysfunction and sexual trauma. It contains a whole bunch of direct lines to Pastoral, which is really funny.
Yeah.
Like repeated motifs and even like visual theming. Like, you perhaps noticed the old mother and the clock and the boy with the painted white face.
Yes.
Which is beat for beat. I don't know if it was the same clock, exactly the same clock as Pastoral, but it sure looked similar in style.
Yeah.
Different boy, definitely, but
oh yeah.
But yes, it's interesting to have seen both of them. It's interesting to see them in this order because you can see a lot of the like thematic through lines of Pastoral being developed here, right? Like the cross dresser, the trans woman in the bath, in the bath, you know what I mean? The coloring of those scenes and the vibe of those scenes recalls the circus to me from Pastoral. The circus freak show.
Yeah.
Very similar in vibe.
Yes. It is, this was kind of a and like Yeah. What's his name? Sorry. Teriyama's oeuvre is much larger. Like, he was also a poet and novelist and, like, and what do you call it? Playwright? Playwright.
Yeah.
So...
one of them Shakespeare types.
Yeah. So his like, kind of... what he is drawing on for movies is a much broader thing than coming back to Bakemonogatari and having seen a bunch of Shinbo stuff and going like, oh, you were developing these ideas back here. Mm-hmm. But this is a... yes, there... it is interesting seeing both, like, theme and visually stuff that he will go on to do more of in Pastoral.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a single shot of the main character, like, drawing back a curtain and there just being something that is not physically there, uh-huh, but, like, emotionally is, versus that's all over Pastoral. It's like interesting stuff like that where it feels like something that he was like did once and was like, what if I built a movie around that? What if I, like, just did that over and over and over again to the point where it becomes a repeated a motif rather than like a single scene. Also fantastic use of color. The use of green as, like, kind of... it's family scenes, right? It's it's being trapped in but also the last scene is green. Because mostly throughout the movie, scenes are tinted green when it's just him and his family.
The scene... oh, right, when he's with the crew, right?
Yeah.
Well, he's talking about how they became... how the family
real
during that section, right?
That's...
I was going to say, the faces are more of like a tawny, like a gold tint.
The faces?
When it's like cycling...
oh, sorry, I meant the... yeah, second to last scene.
Yeah,
I guess
that would normally I would say, like, oh, that's a cute moment at the end of that scene, but it goes on for like 4 minutes or something like that.
Use of like purple as almost like a fantasy escape that then ends with the plane burning.
Yes. The fire looks great.
Oh, like, yeah, it's so good. And then and then black and white for like single characters. There's also the red in the middle where it's a bunch of characters just like reading out been called the misconnections. They all like just classified ads.
Yes. The classified ad section is great. Yes, I think this is a movie full of like really stellar like visual moments and scenes that are really, really striking, you know.
Yeah.
The missed connections, the classified ads one being one of them, and right
that is
like there's a lot of like queerness in this movie and like sexual uncertainty, right?
Yes, I was gonna say, in addition to Pastoral, the other movie that we have seen at least relatively recently that it definitely feels like it is in conversation with is Funeral Parade of Roses.
Yes, there's definitely like there's a very similar vibe in like the youth of this to the filmmakers in Funeral Parade of Roses, right? Mm-hmm. They're kind of hippie-ish. They have similar hairstyles.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the classified ads is like it's not doing the same semi-real
bit like line blurring
Funeral Parade is, but it had the same vibe of like interviewing people.
Yes.
Right.
Because there's the bits in Funeral Parade of Roses where they're like, they ask as if it's a man on the street interview, you know,
right.
What their relationship with like queerness and being a gay boy is, you know. Mm-hmm. They talk about it in a way that feels very real.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It may not be exactly their story, but they're definitely talking to queer people, real queer people.
And then also the bit where they're filming, there's like, yeah, the graffiti everywhere is so good.
Yeah.
But they're filming.
To see someone like chalking it up on the wall was really fun.
The bit where they're filming the like introduction introduction for young people to drugs.
Yes.
And then the cameraman, like, just leaning down, like, putting the camera down and then coming into the camera to smoke with a guy.
Yes.
A while. Really fantastic bit.
Broadly, this is a movie about a boy. What's the boy's name? I lost track of it at some point.
Wait.
Setsu's a sister. Setsu.
Yeah. Hideki?
Hideaki. Hideaki. Okay. Well, it's about Hideaki. He's college age. He's going to college.
Yeah.
He's interested in the soccer team, but maybe not for the reasons that the guy who runs the soccer team thinks that he is.
Mm-hmm.
He has a younger sister who is having sex with a rabbit. Not sex.
Yes.
But she is, she's holding the struggling rabbit to her chest so that it kicks her boobs.
Yes.
Which is not exactly sex with a rabbit, but is close. And she has no interest in men
because
she has this rabbit.
Yep.
His father is a deadbeat who no longer has a job and kind of mooches off of him and harasses women in a particularly like cowardly, like peeper kind of way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then his mother, the grandmother of the family, is kind of an overbearing, ineffectual matriarch who just like can't take responsibility for the things that she thinks must be done. So she forces other people to do them for her, right?
Mm-hmm.
She makes the neighbor kill the rabbit.
Yeah.
To get rid of it.
And then immediately is like, when the sister asks, is like, oh, I tried to stop him.
Yes, yes. Immediately lying about it and running away when people get mad at her, you know?
Yeah.
So it's about this kid. He doesn't know what to do with himself, right? He's in school, but it doesn't really seem to be very engaged with it. He dreams about leaving the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting bit where they talk about America. The grandmother hates America. She says she despises them. And the like priest, the missionary that she's talking to is like, well, no, whether or not you like America, everyone likes running hot water, right?
America invented
Yes.
This, hot like, water.
America is a symbol of progress that people are tied down to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, even this kid is like, maybe things will get better if I go to America, right?
Mm-hmm.
He spends a lot of the movie trying to get closer to the like soccer club, soccer team captain, you know, in a way that's like, he's not really interested in women. He has a traumatic experience with a sex worker that the guy foists him on to, you know what I mean? Whether or not he's gay, he's definitely interested in this male intimacy with Ozu? What's his name?
Wait, what is his name?
The soccer guy.
That's Omi.
Omi. It's like he has a trouble connecting with women other than his sister, and he really likes this guy and he wants to be close with him, but the guy is like only interested in machismo male bonding and fucking women and pushing him to fuck women, you know what I mean? We get like it's almost exactly the same scene as the rape scene in Pastoral, except he's just the age gap is less, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Like down to him lying comatose while she like wrestles the pants off of him while he's like face down, which is really interesting. It's very specific imagery, you know?
Yeah. I think, there's something about this scene that is, like, he's almost resigned to it.
Yeah, he goes catatonic way faster. He's not fighting as much, but he does run away.
At the end.
Yeah.
Forgetting his shoes.
Yeah. And then, yes, there's the interesting thing where he's so interested in this guy, and the guy makes a very specific comment of when he meets his sister for the first time, the soccer guy, she looks just like you.
Mm-hmm.
And then ends up dating her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's this interesting like almost connection between the two of them. This is devastating to our sweet boy, because it's it hits as like, a if only you were a girl I would have dated you, which is really interesting. There's the interesting tragic this like homoerotic tension. A lot of the classified ads are men seeking men, which is also interesting. There's this like homoeroticism throughout the film.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it is seeking a bunch of different things.
Yes.
Like, one guy is like, yeah, I want sex. Another guy's like, oh yeah, I'm just looking for friendship.
Yeah.
And yes, and then there's, you know, friendship in like physical meeting up, and then there's also just like, yeah, I just want to like chat with someone through letters. That's enough. But like all of these different ways in which you can interact with other people, and they're all like valid, I think.
Yeah,
presented
yeah.
as
see, yeah. That's what I'm getting at. Where I don't know necessarily that the main boy is gay, you know, but he's like drawn to this. He has trouble relating to women. He has trouble understanding women. So there's this like interesting blurring that's happening where his like the intimate relationships he's seeking out are all men.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a blurring of the sexual and the friendship that's like hard for him to unpack too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the expectation of women, of wanting to sleep with women, is like scary to him. He has a hard time like connecting to that at all. So he has to get all of his fulfillment through men. This is also like when he's closer to his father, you know what I mean? He's like, I want to win a trip to Hawaii and I'll take you with me. You know, of all of the family, he's like, I love my dad and I want to bring my dad with me, you know?
Yeah. Wait, it's the dad who's entering the contest, right?
Is the dad the one entering the contest?
I think so.
Okay.
Because he ends with like, just give me my.
I thought that was further back. Something like that. But you know. He is still hung up on his dad. He's trying to like, and he like dresses it up as, I want my dad to have like make an honest living for himself. I want to buy him a noodle cart so he stops bothering me. But there's this like particular like, I want him to be on his own, and I want him to be able to take care of himself, and I don't want to see him like creeping around staring at women through the bathroom or like restroom windows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know.
I want my dad to stop being a freaking creep.
Yes. Yes. The gay stuff is really interesting.
Right. Yes. Yes. No, I'm looking at a set of screenshots on IMDb because they were there, and I was like, yeah, I'll just browse through these. It's really interesting that the empty boxing ring is also cast in green.
Yeah.
Again, it's like,
oh, the boxing ring shot that pops up a few times throughout. It's just like this wide shot of an empty boxing ring and an empty crowd that you can barely make out the stands. It's just saturated in green. Such a beautiful, weird shot.
Well, first time you see it is before green has the different connotation of being about I've already forgotten his name, about the guy's family. Hideaki. And it is right after the guy who gives the monologue at the beginning has finished talking about a movie about boxing. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, of course. And then, yes, and then it's like, and then it comes back later. It's like, oh, huh. That's, yeah, it's a really interesting, it's never full. There's never anyone there. It's just, yeah.
There's no triumph to it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. But there's also, yes, there's also no loser. It's just empty. It's waiting for someone to arrive. It's waiting for the next match.
Yes, much of this is waiting for something to happen, right? After his sister's rabbit is killed, she kind of like wanders around aimlessly until she makes her way into the soccer club's like showers room, where she's like assaulted by four or five guys, you know what I mean? A multiplying set of guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And despite I just forgot his name again. Hideaki. Despite him like knowing that something is going on and trying to stop it, he can't get the door open, and he ends up just waiting for it to be over. You know?
Yeah, when someone finally comes. Oh, God, what a line.
What a line.
Someone finally comes and is like, oh, yeah.
A bit of flesh fell from the sky, and we're all having a bite.
Yeah. And then he's like, yeah, go away. You're a wet blanket. Closes the door again.
I don't even know if he knows it's his sister at that point.
Yeah.
You know something is going on. Like, he's like alienated from this part of maleness, right? He's not like, when she's in that room, the first guy who sees her like jumps on her like an animal, you know? It's really horrible.
She just says like, my rabbit died.
Yeah, and then he just goes for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable scene.
It's a really horrible scene. There's two really, really uncomfortable sex scenes in this.
Yes. And both have just like a wild sonic landscape.
Oh, the soundscape is horrible. Really.
The first one is when he's with the sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a combination of like a Buddhist monk chanting sutras.
Yeah.
And a song on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? There's something else on top of that also.
I don't know. I just...
That's added in. But it's just... It is an overwhelming experience.
I remember really strikingly when his sister's being assaulted. He can't get the door open. So he's trying to like just ring his like bell on his bicycle.
Yeah.
To like make it uncomfortable for them so that they stop, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's just like hammering this bell over and over again until it becomes like a siren. And then the sound of that continues even after he stops ringing the bell.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And then, yeah.
The choral stuff, the like songs that are being sung throughout the movie are also really interesting.
This again is, I said after we watched Pastoral, which I think has more visual stuff that Ikuhara pulls on.
Mm-hmm.
But also just the use of song is very Ikuhara.
Yes, it feels like you know the dual songs of Tenno have a very similar like choral quality to them.
Mm-hmm. Which like listen, if there's any director you should pull on, Teriyama is one of the one of the highlights. I know.
Really fascinating movie.
Yeah. It is.
What do you think of the breakdown at the end where it becomes a movie again? The speech. You know what I mean? After he's dragged away by the cops and then it like cuts to the whole like performing troupe together, basically.
It's so... Okay. There's something... Holding this and Pastoral at the same time is such a fascinating experience. Because, one, there's a bunch of like yes, visual and thematic stuff that is replicated across. But Pastoral is like a coherent story. It doesn't start out that way. It kind of starts out like vibey and does collapse into, or collapse is maybe the wrong word, like intentionally fall apart into this kind of surreal...
Collapse works. The house falls apart at the end.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't want to make it sound like it is... a negative thing. It works incredibly well.
It is purposeful.
Yes, it is purposeful. It becomes this like surreal, multiple things are happening at the same time. He's talking to his younger self. But it is still a coherent narrative in a way that this is. There is the core through line of Hideaki kind of falling apart or like becoming more and more disillusioned with.
And his family unit coming undone.
Yeah.
Right? His sister leaving for to take his crush away from him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The grandmother just sort of wanders into town and lying to people about having a lot of money so that someone will adopt her.
Yeah.
And the father just like. Oh, he, like, tries to steal the noodle cart or something like
that?
Yeah. Even though his son had bought it for him?
Uh-huh.
Is that what happened?
Yes. I think that, at that point, the vibe is, like, yes, he bought the noodle cart for his father, but his father said no so many times, or just showed no interest, that at the end, when his father wanted to take it over, it felt like a betrayal, is my read on that, at least.
Yeah.
And so there is that. But then there's also just a bunch of scenes that don't fit into that.
Yeah.
And so it's just, like, I think they are all of a vibe. There's the scene of the girl just wandering around with a giant dick punching bag.
Yes. And take out your frustrations on this.
Yeah.
The part where she's like bluffing to a cop or whatever about it because she has a bag covering up the penis tip on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
What? It's just a bag. You can't get mad at me. It's not illegal to hang up a bag.
And like, yeah, again, they're all...
What about the Bible girl?
Oh, she's incredible.
What a cool girl.
Oh. Again, that was also a very Funeral Parade of Roses scene.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, the camera crew is interviewing a person. I think, like, again, this movie is not trying for the realism that's in Funeral Parade of Roses.
Funeral Parade of Roses often in an unreal space.
Yes. But it is, yes, it does feel similar in that way. She's incredible.
Bible's my favorite book. I read it every night.
Uh-huh.
Also talking about all the time.
What's the best
Christian? There are Christians in this movie.
Yeah. What's the best place to what's the best book to read on when you're going to the bathroom, Ben? The Bible. The
Bible. Yeah.
You know,
The great scene in the middle where they are where they burn an American flag and everyone's got like these. This must be some Japanese politician or something. The big head that they're all wearing.
And most of them, I guess there are two people wearing it that is just like colored blue.
Yeah.
And then there's a, you know, main guy just doing squats.
Squats, yeah. While American flags burn, it's really funny. Right, it's very it's an anti it has a vibe of a light vibe of anti-Americanism, right? It's not mainly about that, right?
But, no, it is.
It's anti-American occupation, presumably, right? There's a mention of one of the students getting in trouble for attacking an American soldier. You know what I mean? And there's this vibe of the impotency of like waiting for, hoping that going to America or that America will save you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The like slimy priest, you know what I mean, who talks about like old folks' homes that are like the best of the best because they're inspired by American practices and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And how he's just in her house, like, in her eyes, uninvited, smoking and ashing all over her floor, you know?
Yeah. Smoking, the bit where she's like, oh, a Japanese person smoking non-Japanese cigarettes?
Uh-huh.
How could you?
She does later say she doesn't smoke Japanese cigarettes, which is really funny.
Oh, yeah. You know, everyone contains multitudes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I would say it is more generally steeped in kind of Japanese leftism of the time than like very specific.
Yeah. This isn't the main focus, but it does come up a few times. This like skepticism of America, you know, and it's not like I wouldn't call it like a nationalist pro-war movie really, like, either. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Although stuff like it gets really blurry because America is the U.S. is part of like taking apart Japan's fascist empire, right?
Yes.
One of the times where America looks really good in history is during World War II, you know? And then America just never leaves Japan and occupies Japan forever and like has a campaign of cultural imperialism.
Right.
Know?
Yes. This is one of the things that I think because of Manabe Straight, I had associated this movie with the Anpo protests, which it is not, in the sense that it is not about those, right? It's not...
What are the Anpo protests?
Okay, right. Those were protests in, like, 60 and 61, and then again in 69 and 70, about the... treaty with the U.S. Around Japanese self-defense and basically preventing Japan from having their own military, but also tying Japan, letting the U.S. have a bunch of military bases in Japan.
Yes, right. Like, Japan, the country of Japan, guilty of a lot of horrible things during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
True atrocities, you know what I mean? Not to say that America isn't constantly guilty of those, you know, but because that's what, where it gets complicated is the answer that Japan has to be a like subservient state to the United States as it does like global imperialism? Like, is that the answer? Is the answer to have a standing army? Like, that doesn't seem good either, right?
No, but there's a way in which, like, I think both leftist and right-wing movements hated the UNPO.
Yeah.
Mutual defense treaty.
Mm-hmm.
For very different reasons.
Yes, yes, yes.
The right was like, no, we should have we have a right to have a standing army.
We have a right to have a standing army, and we should go back to trying to conquer Asia.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And it's like, okay. And the left was like, obviously, because it's during the Cold War, is like, no, actually, America's evil. And also, we don't need a standing army,
yeah.
Right? Or I'm sure that there are pieces of the left who would like to have a military.
Yeah, yeah.
But the general vibe is more, we should strive for peaceful solutions to issues, yeah. Not...
Because it turns out that entrusting everything to the United States was hideous and poisonous an idea, mm-hmm. because of how hideous and poisonous the United States is. And how it is degraded even further than it already was, which was impossibly cruel. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? We've come a long way since being the quote-unquote good guys in World War II, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Where there were atrocities on a scale unbelievable that the United States was able to have a part in dismantling that made the U.S. look really, really good, and they've been coasting on ever since. You know what
yep.
I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, American occupation of Japan isn't good. The United States has military bases all over the world that it uses as a staging ground to continue, like, imperialist efforts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Yeah, not the main focus of the movie, but I definitely noted that it came up, because that's definitely tied into, like, the leftist causes of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really quick, just some other stuff that was good.
Yeah.
All of the, like, quotes written as graffiti in various places are good. In addition to the just graffiti, the don't allow freedom for people who are the enemies of freedom.
Uh-huh.
Which is like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a real, like, resonant thing now, where we have such a problem with liberals being like, well, we can't suppress the speech of fascists who say that everyone but them should die. Like, mm-hmm. that would just be rude.
But also, scenes I liked, the guy reading to his mom, mm-hmm. just, like...
Falls asleep in the restaurant.
Yes. The bit where he wakes her up, and she, like, kind of realizes what goes on, and then just, like, immediately is like, nope, I'm going back to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not saying anything worth listening to.
That's really good, yeah.
Use of color throughout is great.
Yeah. It hits so many different color modes. Like, it does just go into full color sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think probably by the end, most of it is full color, yeah. But it starts with a monologue in black and white,
mm-hmm.
and then a long sequence in green, and then transitions to this, like, lavender.
Mm-hmm. The man-powered airplane.
The man-powered airplane.
This is another, or it's an idea that is related to something in Pastoral,
mm-hmm.
but the specific imagery that is repeated is... him running along the train tracks as if he is the train.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This dream of the, like, the kind of poisonous dream that through sheer effort, a person alone can get where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And the movie opens with, or not opens with, the kind of towards the end of the monologue,
mm-hmm.
the guy talks about, the reason he is crying is because he read a thing about a guy whose glider broke apart.
Yes, a Korean man who was
Korean
trying
man.
To return to Korea.
Yeah.
By using a glider. You know
uh-huh.
what I mean?
And it broke apart and he died.
Yeah.
And so it's like this, yes, it keeps coming back to this idea of really that there is no escape.
Mm-hmm.
Is, or
no escape for this guy, certainly.
Yes, yes. Because,
again, he's like, he's not part of leftist organ. We see a lot of left, mm-hmm. like, leftist-seeming, like, hippie kids running around, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's not part of that group. He, like, craves the soccer club.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right, yes. Another great bit. One of the kind of disconnected, like, thematically connected, but disconnected from in terms of like narrative,
mm-hmm.
Is two guys just lighting up in front of like a monument to the Showa emperors.
Yeah.
Coronation.
But yes, like he's trying to play the game,
mm-hmm.
even though he's got a weird combination of he can't let go of his family, he can't let go of his father, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's obsessed, he's like caught on trying to make all of this stuff work, even if he doesn't know how to engage with it properly. And he's not throwing away his books and joining like leftist movements, right?
Yes.
And that's why the man-powered airplane is a machine that you can operate all on your own,
mm-hmm.
that will get you where you're going, right?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, he can't make it work.
Yeah.
It's doomed because he's alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so he burns it and has nowhere else to go.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. To this point, there's a great bit where Omi talks about the soccer club. Or first talks about European kids living in like semi communes with like five people.
Women too.
Yeah. And then
that's a guy who's trying to get an all him and four girls commune, uh-huh. going.
And then talks about the soccer club as also kind of like shared space.
Mm-hmm.
The illusion of that is then broken by most of the soccer club,
mm-hmm.
Ganging up and raping his sister.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The way they like multiply in that scene, it seems like there you see one person and then you see two more people join in, and then the next scene there's like four or five people, mm-hmm. in, you know.
I would say most of the sex that we see in this movie is like a writhing mass of flesh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really unappealing.
Yes, it's not sexy.
Unappealing in the best way, right? Yeah, like, yeah. Intentionally
Wait, like, this is something that like Iroge often like has scenes like this,
mm-hmm.
but have beautiful, highly produced, sexy CGs instead, mm-hmm. of the most horrible thing you've ever seen in your life that, yeah. makes your skin crawl and makes, uh-huh. you want to leave the room and makes your wife and your boyfriend also want to leave the room because they don't want to see this anymore. And it's making them uncomfortable. So yes, it's interesting how I feel like it works better when you Iroge is able to approach this space because they're able to show tit on screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because they're beholden to the idea of you're going to jack off to this in a way that this move, like cinema, experimental film, isn't really about jacking off. You know what, yes. I mean?
There's a lot of
to make it like worse.
There's,
right?
a lot of titty on screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Very little of it is like sexy.
Yeah. Which is really interesting.
Right. The photo at the end where there's just a woman who topless.
Yeah, yeah.
Waiting for like, the picture to be taken.
Yeah, this is another like weirdo group, mm-hmm. that is reminiscent of the Freak Show to me, right? Mm-hmm. But going back to the soccer club, there's a part where someone, I think it's, is it the father? Someone says that it's just like a children's game for grown men. You know what, mm-hmm. I mean? This idea, mm-hmm. that it's like, it's a trap to get them to use all of their energy up on these like are shallow bonds that ultimately come down to wanting to use women, you know what I,
yes,
mean?
Yes, yes.
Camaraderie over what? Like breaking a woman's spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't bring him any joy because what he seeks is a deeper intimacy that he cannot achieve with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. There's something I was gonna say about that. Oh, yes, right, the balls. One of the first moments we get of Omi,
mm-hmm.
is him talking about how baseball is a more virile sport than ping pong because the balls are better, and that's why soccer,
not the balls are better,
or sorry, bigger, and that's why soccer is the best because the ball is even bigger than baseball. Which really just sets the tone for, it's like Hideaki can't or doesn't want to,
mm-hmm.
acknowledge that the masculinity on display is kind of toxic and bad.
Yeah.
At that point.
Because there's something attractive about it to him.
Yes,
he hasn't left it,
yes.
behind yet.
But it does.
And
yes.
he never will.
Uh-huh.
He fails to on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way he, like, there's a scene of him just, like, in the... Because he's, like, the ball boy for the team. He's not even a soccer player, right? The guy's trying to get him to join the soccer club. But, and he, like, this, like, really affects him, right? Because he's like, I do want to join the soccer club. He gives the monologue at the beginning, right? It is him who...
I think it's someone else.
Is it someone else?
It's a different character.
Interesting. The thing about the boxer is reminiscent of him. The, like, I wanted to be a boxer.
Sorry. But... Yes. Yes, it is.
There is the stuttering speech is someone else.
Yes. Oh, God. Who was that?
The stuttering speech is really good.
It's incredible.
But yes, this idea that he's like the coward, right? He's like, I wanted to be a boxer, but I couldn't look at my my opponent, right? I was too afraid and I quit after 3 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a great scene of him in the locker room alone, cleaning up, and he's just like hitting himself and like kind of like shaking because he can't handle what's going on. He doesn't know what to do with all this pressure. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
The stutter speech. Stuttering is ideology.
Yeah.
Stuttering is praxis.
Uh-huh. Yes, that speech is so fun. One, because again, at that point in the movie, like, it has been yes, you are ready for scenes to just be kind of, again, thematically connected, but narratively unmoored from the rest of the movie. And it's just this incredible speech about how this person who... was born in Korea but grew up in Japan, right? He has to choose his words carefully. Both, right? He does both things. He has to choose his words carefully, so sometimes he says things that he doesn't mean.
Yes.
Because he's choosing words that he won't stutter.
Mm-hmm.
But also it makes him consider his words in a way that most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, talks about how stuttering actually is ideology, because the smoothness that is promised by in this case America or in general mainstream Japanese culture is fake.
Yeah, yeah.
It is empty words, if you will, rather than someone who, yes, has to consider their words and may occasionally stutter, but means what they say.
Yes. This is the, like, strength and weakness of leftism, summed up in a really interesting way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the, like, ability to think for yourself, but also without that adherence to a centralized dogma, you can stutter and stop and be taken advantage of, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is also infighting between leftists who... are having trouble, like, nailing down exactly what it is that they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than fascism's, like, very appealing centrality, right?
Yeah.
That makes it kind of hard to resist.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know exactly what to say, because you literally only have to say the words, right? Leftism, you have to think for yourself and come to conclusions and be thoughtful.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Really interesting stuff. Fascinating movie.
Yeah. I'm really glad that we watched... I'm glad that we saw Pastoral. That has cemented itself as one of my favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad that we saw this as well. Just, like, gorgeous movie. Really fun to rotate in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, pick apart. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Both visually and, yeah, in a like, narrative sense.
Yeah. I think it's a great movie.
I think it's a fantastic movie. Yeah.
I feel we talk about everything, but because there's no notes, it still takes so much less time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that I'll take notes differently and we'll discuss other stuff for less time? No.
No. Why would we?
Why would we?
I do think there's something freeing about not having notes to reference.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like, almost certainly, if this was our main beat, if the pod was about movies, I would probably watch each movie twice. Once just, like, through to get the experience, and then kind of having a hit list of stuff I want to take notes on.
Yeah.
Go through again, pausing when I need to, like, write up thoughts on.
It's especially nice to be able to double check and also have all the names written down.
Yeah. But there's something nice about just talking. And like, did we miss stuff that I like thought of at the time and really wanted to talk about, but then didn't get around to? Sure, probably. But I think we had a good conversation.
Yeah. I think it was a great conversation. Now, I have a lot of notes. I don't actually have a lot of notes. I have a small amount of notes for this section because it's pretty short.
We're transitioning to CCC.
Unless you had something else to talk about. You have anything else going on? Listen to our anime episode.
Yeah, listen to our anime episode. Play Moth X Flame.
Play Moth X Flame, yeah.
It's good, I promise.
Okay. Let's move over to CCC.
CCC. Fate Extra CCC.
Fate Extra CCC. We have finished, finally, Fate Apocrypha.
Yes, we're done.
Fate Apocrypha marks Fate Apocrypha is very defining of a lot of Fate stuff going forward. I think CCC is in a lot of Fate stuff going forward, but I think is probably less defining in the same way. Because I think that Apocrypha is the bones on which Fate Grand Order is built on. Much of Apocrypha characters are really common, and extra characters are really common in Grand Order.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the way that Higashide writes and thinks is more foundational to the way that Fate Grand Order works than CCC.
Yes. I would say, I think there's an element of, I would say, Apocrypha is more of a symptom of... the approach going forward than like foundational in a
foundational
sense
understanding how things work
because I
think that reproducing Apocrypha is pretty is easy, you know. What I mean, it's an easy path to take. And also it seems like Higashide has a lot of time on his hands for working on stuff, so he's around a lot. CCC is one of the last things on our list that I'm really excited to cover. You know what I mean? I would say that there is a Fate Grand Order event about the CCC characters, kind of like a CCC light, you know, that is why I am into Fate the way that I am into Fate. You know, it was what got me over the hump from Grand Order is like a fine thing that I use to pass the time into, okay, this is something I'm really interested in. Right. It'll be interesting to revisit that one day. Especially with the context of who the Fate Grand Order or for the CCC characters are in a little more depth, right? But I expect to be... It's interesting. I've been looking forward to getting to CCC for a long time. I was not tempted to play it earlier because, you know, it wasn't fans translated until recently, mm-hmm. anyway, and Fen and I are trading off things that we're playing early, so that at least one of us, hopefully, hasn't played it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You even stopped playing Grand Order, although that may have been more of a, I don't want to read it twice, more than I want to have a fresh take.
Yeah, it was a real, like, I have trouble playing, but not playing gacha games in general. If I'm gonna play something, I'm gonna go all in on it, and so doing one too many Grand Order events, I was like, I have to stop. I cannot be wasting my time on events that do not deserve it.
Yes,
I have better things to be doing with my life.
Common gacha problem is time filler events that aren't really interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think Arknights is pretty good at avoiding this. Like, those events are so long.
I've skipped probably more than half of Arknights' events. And I'm sure there's interesting stuff in them, but they aren't really like... Arknights is an anthology story.
Mm-hmm.
So most of things that happen in that game don't actually matter to what the plot is. And some of it's interesting, but I think it really comes down to what your aesthetic is to mm-hmm. a certain point. Because mm-hmm. it's like... Do I want to read about sand pirates today? Do I want to read about the, like, Chinese god figures? No, not really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you don't vibe with a mix of court politics and what's the word like kung fu films, then yeah, the Lunar New Year events are not going to be your quality.
But I do think that generally for Arknights, the effort is higher. A lot of the mm-hmm. Fate Grand Order events are often the exact same plot
mm-hmm.
Executed over and over again for not very interesting characters.
Yep.
Which is, like, not great. The CCC event is not that. The CCC event is essentially a main story chapter,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is quite good, but I mm-hmm. haven't revisited in a long time, so we'll get back to that. So... what I'm getting at is, I expect to be, even if I, it'll be interesting to see my reaction to a lot of these characters, because I know that the CCC event versions of them are a bit watered down and specific, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are fake goatized versions of the characters rather than whatever is here.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I have such affection for these characters just by instinct that I expect to be a lot more popular than I have been for a while, or not popular, positive than I have been for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they're great. I'm very excited to actually get into it. The prologue didn't really get into much, but
no, we intentionally, and we're supported by our wonderful Discord in choosing a relatively light episode.
Yes.
This time around. Especially since we're moving in less than 2 weeks. It was nice to just ease our way in.
Yes.
Get a little dip a toe into the imaginary sea.
See a couple new characters. Space. Some familiar characters.
Yeah, like Taiga and...
yeah, Taiga. Fujimoto Taiga. Uh-huh. Extra wasn't that long ago.
It feels like forever ago.
It feels like it was a long time ago.
It was... wait, when was Extra?
It was, like, last year?
Let's see. Oh, right. moonarchive.art/schedule. Let's see. Fate Extra. Oh, we did that in 3 episodes? Okay, it was... yes, it was a little more than a year ago. May 11th.
More than a year ago. Wow. Okay, that was a long time.
When was our... the Madoka Magica
Blue Reflection
poster is really good. June 8th 2024 mm-hmm. is when we ended.
Wow.
So it was a while ago.
Yeah. I remember being, I had some, like, issues with Extra, mm-hmm. parts of the ending, the main villain, so to speak, didn't really compel me.
Yep.
But, I remember liking it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Possibly more than people tend to like extra. I hear that extra is something that you get through to get to CCC, basically. Mm-hmm. Especially with regards to the combat, which I thought was fun. But mm-hmm. I still play Fate Grand Order, so I guess I'm fucking... I've lost my mind at some point. What'd you think of CCC the first time you played it?
If I'm being honest.
Yeah. I've gotten the vibe that you didn't like it as much as you were hoping to. And you're worried that I'm not going to like it as much as I hope to.
I think it was so hyped up that when I finally got to it, I was like, yeah, this is like really good.
Mm.
It's maybe not, let's see. It's like probably, it's definitely top 10. It might be top 5 RPGs, but it's not like the best RPG I've ever played.
Blue Reflection clears it?
I think Blue Reflection 2 and Caligula Effect.
Ooh.
2?
Ooh. Interesting.
Yeah.
There's some stuff that I get to where it's hyped up a lot that, where I end up being, even just with Nasu stuff, there's stuff that I get to that's been hyped up a lot for me where I can't come away really underwhelmed, right? Funnily enough, Fate Stay Night ended up being that for me. I was pretty underwhelmed by Fate Stay Night when I actually played it. Certain parts of the Fate Grand Order storyline that were really, really hyped up ended up hitting really well for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had like heard them talked up to hell and back, you know? So I have no way of knowing how this is gonna play out. It is better if you have something talked down and end up really liking it. I think that has a more a very pronounced effect. Tsukihime, for example. Mm-hmm. Original Tsukihime.
I will also say that Refrain easily clears.
Alright.
Oh, yeah, actually, looking at my backlogged, like, favorite top 5, mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to choose between CCC and Caligula Effect 2. Maybe CCC is above Caligula Effect 2.
Yeah.
Because I need to stick La Milana on here somewhere.
I feel like if you combined Caligula Effect 1, the good parts of Caligula Effect 1 and the good parts of Caligula Effect 2, then you end up with a top 5 game.
Yes.
But I think, like, on their own, their shortcomings bring them down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Caligula 1 has... The highs are more high for me than Caligula 2.
Yes.
But, like, Caligula 2 is such a smoother and, like, more engaging experience overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, it'll be fun.
I think... Yeah. Yeah. Blue Reflection 2 is, like... When I say that is a top 5 game, what I mean is you play 1 and then you watch the anime and then you play 2. Yes. And it's like, it's such a great culmination of everything that came before in a way that is, some people might view as disqualifying. I view as like a really good finale.
CCC similarly might be a little bit hard to fully grapple onto if you didn't have not only extra, but perhaps Fate Stay Night.
Yeah,
to have context for Sakura, especially.
Yes,
you know
yes.
what I mean, and yeah. What it does with Sakura. But we will get there.
You do definitely need Fate Stay Night. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's interesting. What are the things that we played ahead? I played the first half of Tsukihime, Blue Glass Moon.
Yeah,
played MaHoYo ahead.
Oh right, I did MaHoYo for Novel Not New.
Yes,
and then Extra and CCC.
Interesting. I feel like I won. I came out of a Blue Glass Moon being like the moon.
And Stay Night.
Oh, you... No, Stay Night doesn't count because you played that before we started the podcast.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. That'd be like saying that we both played ahead for Fate Grand Order when we just played Fate Grand Order.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Are you planning on playing something else ahead?
There's nothing else that I'm like, oh wow, I've got to play this.
Maybe they'll come out with something. Extra Record, the remake.
Mm-hmm. No, I would just wait.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is part of... It has been an interesting process doing this podcast has been a process of like going on a roller coaster with my appreciation of fate.
Yes. I've been pretty low sometimes.
There have been points where I was like, do I even like fate? Is fate good? And like,
but when it's good, it's really good. Is the yeah. Brings you back up. I heard that Hollow Ataraxia, the localization, is coming out in a couple of days or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, you know what fucking slaps? Fate Hollow Ataraxia.
Yeah. Yeah.
More people should have to contend with Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I suppose that's enough talking about the mechanics of the podcast. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Again, yeah. I've played all the way through it twice.
That's so much to play it all the way. I think you should have saved the true end route
for pods. For now,
so you would have had something new to do.
That's fair. I will say, I have something new to do in that I'm doing Nero.
So we're both Nero girlies this time.
Yes, yes. I did this in
part... We're not hiding her name because we already know who she is.
Yes, the servant select screen them.
They call her Saber later, so I was I was like, oh, are they trying to put that back under the rug? No.
What was it?
So you're going to play Nero.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm also
playing Nero.
I did this in part to make Catherine's job easier, because Catherine is once again making us videos of the other two servants, because
friend of the pod,
we will friend. Also be doing two playthroughs.
Yes.
In case... I guess I've said this like places, but I don't think I've said it on pod. The way that we're doing this is playing through with our servant, getting the servant end.
Yes.
Intentionally avoiding the like quote unquote true end flags. And then playing through again with Gilgamesh to both get Gilgamesh's story and pick up the true end stuff.
Sorry, one second.
Yes.
Are you telling me that Gilgamesh is here?
He was on the servant select screen, but
I know. I mean, for our listeners who might not know.
It's very... Okay. It is going to be very funny playing Gil, because he is going to start where I left him, which is, like, leveled up quite a bit.
That's pretty funny.
So I should... playing Gil, I will just walk through, I guess, most of the game.
Now, how did Fate Extra end? Let's recap Fate Extra really quickly.
You do it.
I want to hear
you. Oh, okay. I will try. Fate Extra, you play as Hakano, what's the male Hakano? I guess it's Hakano either way. It's just the...
Yeah, I think the official name is Hakano for both, but there is like a default male and default girl name that pops up that are slightly different.
Okay.
I think he has a pretty different name, but I think canonically his name is Hakano.
Yeah. Hakano is an NPC Fate Extra takes place in the Moon Cell, which is a giant supercomputer in the moon.
Supercomputer on the moon.
I'm gonna try to do this in three sentences.
Ooh.
The patented Fate Moon Archive three sentence summary.
Yeah, yeah. Which means we're better than just King Things by two.
I don't know if that's better or worse, Ben.
We're worse than just King Things by two.
I don't know if it's better or worse, Ben.
We are just King Things.
You,
I'm Cameron.
I'm Michael?
Start over.
Do I have to start talking about Shakespeare now?
We were just talking about Shakespeare until recently.
You're the one who brought him up.
Which one of us is more likely to have read Homestuck?
Instead
of as a podcast.
Me?
Yeah, I think it's you.
I would hate Reddit, is the thing.
Yeah, I would.
I guess that does kind of make me Michael.
There you go.
Sentence two. You play as Hakano, who is an NPC on the Moon Cell who gained sentience and was rescued by the servant you play in that game. You make it through the battle royale that is most of the game, and at the very last moment meet with Twice Peaceman, who has not had a presence before now but shows up at the end to be the final boss, and give literally any thematic weight to anything that has happened so far. Period.
Fuck. But you didn't say how the game ended, which was my original question.
Okay. The game ends
okay,
with...
Okay, okay, okay.
Oh, right, yes. Hakano touches the moon cell, and then what?
Okay. Basically, the moon cell is offering a wish. The exact mechanics of how it's granting this wish with its ultimate technology is kind of unknown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm convinced it's still in some way magical and reality-altering. You think it's just information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's interesting. Twice is... He's an NPC too, right? At that point?
Yeah, at that point.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. He is, like Suisho in,
Granvalm.
He is trying to win even though he should be disqualified by the very nature of what he is, right? Mm-hmm. He's trying to get someone else to grant his wish for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if they won't do that, he kills them.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. His wish is to stop war? No, his wish is to make war more until everyone stop war.
He's an accelerationist.
Yes, he believes that by causing mass death, he can shake the earth out of its like malaise that it's settled into, where a European like plutocrat family has like taken over much of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's also some pretty racist homunculus slavery stuff going on in Africa, which they say a lot of pretty bad stuff about. Mm-hmm. But most of that's not in the game. Most of it's in a little magazine that...
Yep.
Hakano refuses to do this and fights him and his servant, the Buddha, for some reason.
Yep.
Which is pretty funny. And... What is Hakano's wish? Hakano's wish is to save the other people, right?
Is that a...
Because whoever you choose lives.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then an interesting thing happens. Hakano is apparently based on a real person, even though she is not a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And that real person wakes up and reunites with the person whose route you chose, either Rin or a homunculus named Brawny, right?
Yes.
But devoid of the memories of the digital Hakano, because they were a distinct entity, despite being based on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Hakano remains in the moon cell, being slowly deleted by the moon cell, while her servant, like, dies with her.
Mm-hmm.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, like, the stinger is the original one wakes up. But, again, no memory carryover. Which is a distinct life. Fate is a lot about how that is a distinct life if you do not have, if your memories aren't contiguous.
Mm-hmm.
in the Tsubihibi discontinuous existence sense.
Yes.
So there's still tragedy even if a servant can be resummoned later, and Hakano isn't even a servant, so she's just gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
Question mark.
Well, okay.
Is there anything else notable that we should talk about with Extra?
I don't think so.
The servants are Archer from Fate's Day Night,
yep.
Shiro, big mad Shiro for some reason. He's a slightly different backstory here, but same basic stuff.
Yep.
Nero, who looks a lot like Saber, Artoria,
mm-hmm.
but she's red. She's red. Not Saber of Red. She's Red Saber.
Yes.
Critically.
Yep.
She's Nero, Claudius. Augustine, the Roman emperor who went mad, helped accelerate the fall of Rome. She's chill and bisexual in this game.
Yeah, shoutouts.
And Tamamo no Mae, the evil fox spirit from various mythologies.
She's normal.
She's normal. She's wifed up. She's a wifed
she's
up fox.
She's so wifed up.
Yeah. Yeah, so you pick one of them in Extra, and yep. They're your companion throughout the game. They invariably fall for you. I'm not sure. Does Archer fall for...
In the way that a Tsundere does.
Okay. I wasn't sure if he had more of a, like, big brother kind of vibe, but you could read into it.
No, it's definitely a, like...
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I guess I didn't finish Archer, but...
Here's the question.
Mm-hmm.
We watched these videos,
yes,
but I didn't process them as much as the stuff that I played. We talked about them at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it fades easier.
It's been over
a year. I think the boy Okay. If you're a boy or a girl, Nero is romantically in love with you.
Yeah.
She's very explicit about this. Mm-hmm. Tamamo no Mai also explicitly says that she'll top if you're a girl.
Yes.
Since you might probably don't know what to do, and she definitely does.
It's okay, yes. That it is funny that she's like, oh, is it the like you're worried that I'm gonna expect you to top? Don't worry about that. I'll do it.
So is there also a scene where Archer's like, buddy, you're gonna have to peg me?
I do not believe so.
That's a shame.
I think that Archer,
I'd have more respect for Shiro if he had that scene.
It's yes, there's something funny about the fact that funny, I say, as like a I know what's happening, but yeah. The fact that Nero and Tamamo
mm-hmm.
are still into you if you're a girl, and Archer is like, yeah, hey buddy.
Yeah.
We're just dudes hanging out.
Because there's the assumption of lesbians are at least palatable in like a ho-ho sexy fantasy way for boys. Mm-hmm. And so they real lesbians win out because of that like presumed acceptable digestible bit about it, right?
I think there was also a bit of only girls would ever pick Archer.
That's not true. That is not true. That's the least true thing ever.
Yeah, I mean like gay boys, but Archer is so bait for Otome people.
Yeah. I'm sure there's gay guys who play Otome games because of the boys.
Hmm. Like us lesbians playing Aroge.
Yeah. Exactly. Straight Aroge, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
However, character select scene has some differences this time, which servant select scene. One, they're all in way more insane outfits, which I think is great.
The character select scene and other stuff that happens in the prologue immediately is this is a way hornier game than Extra.
Yes.
Extra is, despite the, okay, there's like one joke about, okay, there's like, Tamamo has a couple of jokes of a sexual nature.
Her vulpine mounting technique.
Yes. Uh-huh. And the bit where she's like, listen, magical dicks, those exist.
Someone needs to tell
Archer, I don't,
guys, that there's other ways for women to have sex than just scissoring or spawning a magical dick.
Yes.
For example, Yasuko begging Kotomi to bite her clit off.
Yasuko's so cool. Oh, right. It's a little late, but we will cover more Toxic Yuri Jam games next time.
Oh, yeah. I haven't gotten, because of the like, move stuff and some and preparing for this episode, I haven't gotten to play as many as I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I'm only like a third the way through my list, so.
I did get through a couple more, but we'll
judging will be ending soon, which means a lot of games will get a boost because of like judging and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then because of Fate Main Archives, huge pull, everyone will get a boost after that when we talk about
it. Oh, yeah, definitely. But yes, the okay, Nero is in a like chastity bride outfit.
She's in a like latex or leather bodysuit with a zipper all the way down. Uh-huh. That's and has like a bridal gown like theming to it, I would say,
but it's locked.
Yeah. She has like a padlock around her neck and all that stuff.
Archer is in a like leather daddy outfit.
Archer, despite all we just said about him not being gay, is here from Tom of Finland land.
Yeah. And
Tamamo has like a, she's kind of idly, I think. She has like a tiny little mm-hmm. top hat or like a Lolita idol vibe, you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, yes.
Mostly just her boobs way even more out than usual.
Yes. The thing with Tamamo, the problem if you're making a hornier Tamamo is that her extra outfit is already really horny.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's black. I think there's also some like lock theming on it as well. Mm-hmm. There's like, yes, there's some like restrictions incorporated into the servant outfits.
Yes, there are some fun, there is some like horny touches to Nero's outfit, like the fact that the front panel is transparent so you mm-hmm. can see your underwear and the butt cleavage, and it's pretty low cut, but like this new outfit is crazy.
Yes. And also
we're gonna put her on the box.
And also, Gilgamesh is here. Like, Gilgamesh from Fate Stay Night.
Yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
all of his golden armor.
Yeah, 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 wearing his normal outfit. That's the funniest part, is that he showed up wearing his normal clothes. And I wonder if that's like a plot thing, in that for some reason he hasn't switched to this outfit, or if it was to make sure that you would recognize Gilgamesh, or perhaps both. You know what I mean? But if he was a blonde guy who looks like Gilgamesh, maybe people would be suspicious that he wasn't the guy who it is. So him showing up in his armor is a real, like, oh yeah, that's Gil. You know Gil.
Yep.
So yes, you can pick one of the four. I picked Nero.
Yeah.
I'll be doing Gilgamesh run with you later. But
I did Mamo on my first run through, and then Gil for the true end.
I do want to play a Mamo run someday, but I do like Nero so much that I have to do Nero at least once.
I think Mamo's playstyle got tweaked for this game in a way that I didn't fully vibe with.
This is,
and
like,
so
often you will, I see this happen a lot with you, where you bump into a slightly overly complicated play style for a character, and you're like, wow, this is really cool. And as soon as you get into it, they change it on you, and you get mad. This is Summoner Fate from Final Fantasy XIV. Truly, more than anything else, that's the reason you stopped playing Final Fantasy XIV.
Yes. I just... Yeah. Gods. All of my... The problem is that I had fun with Ninja, but all of my muscle memory was as a ranged class.
Yeah.
And so I just did not play a melee class very well. And they massacred my girl.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And you're also playing Nero.
Yes, yes. So, and like... I should say I enjoyed my Tamamo playthrough.
Yes.
There's some changes that I agreed with and some that I was like, I don't know. But I'm excited to play Nero.
Yeah.
And experience what she's like.
And the character you pick is Hakuno again.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, Fen, is this like an alternate version of the events of Extra?
Well, okay. One
or
thing.
Is this like a post-game thing?
Real quick.
You don't have to actually answer that. I'm just positing.
There's a bit on the gender select screen. Right? It's there. I just picked
You can load
looking.
Data from Extra.
No, I mean, on the gender select screen, it says somewhere, something says, like, boys get more information,
I don't remember that.
I think the main difference between the two is that a boy paired with Archer cannot get his third secret garden. We haven't run into those yet.
I don't know what a secret garden is, Fan.
You know. We haven't experienced those yet. But
I know what a secret garden is. It's where you go to meet a very sad girl named Colin.
Yeah.
Hang out with her and try and cheer her up.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a Narakuno Hanazono joke. Sorry.
Why are you apologizing? People
for
should get it.
Dropping random manga jokes in the middle of our coverage of an unrelated game.
People should go read Narakuno Hanazono.
Yeah.
It's good.
If you could stomach it, it's pretty rough at times.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, I would say it's very rough at times. Yes.
So there are downsides to playing as the boy, you're saying.
Yeah. The way it's phrased is that there's also downsides to playing as the girl.
Interesting.
I think that there, especially in the true route, there are some differences.
Oh. That's about.
But we will talk about that when we get there. I'm going to be playing a boy when I do our true route. And I hang out with Gil.
Interesting.
And I'll try to take notes on stuff I do not remember from playing as a girl.
Now, if the thing that you get is more more sexy time with Gil, then I'll forgive them for the Archer thing, because it just means that Archer, who is a Shiro, is a square still.
Uh-huh.
That makes sense to me. You're telling me Gil isn't fucking men? That's crazy. Gil's been fucking men for as long as stories have existed.
Yep.
Okay, we picked our characters. Hakuno,
This is
an assume girl the whole time.
Really quick, when you load a cleared save where you've cleared the true end, we're going to have to do that when we get done. There's a really funny thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you have cleared already, there is a skip to meeting your servant option.
Oh, that's funny.
Which is fun because, yeah, it's the prologue. The only real difference is the very ending where you meet your servant. It was like almost 7 on a Friday, and I was like, I could just skip to...
There's some major differences in the prologue. It is very similar in setup to the extra prologue as well.
What I mean is...
But you mean...
There's no differences. Like, your servant calls out to you, like, twice. Mm. And aside from that, it's just exactly the same.
Now, we see a glimpse of Hakano in a different uniform first. Before we get back to the prologue and there's a new uniform, right?
Or the old uniform.
I'm pretty sure we saw a different school uniform when you're doing the character select.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
And then, back to the kind of like... I don't really love the extra uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
The like brownish yellow is kind of the umber.
Yeah. It's a bad color.
It's not a great color.
Anyway. The very opening is great.
Mm-hmm.
First off, you get... like the computer talking to you.
Right.
And it's like, oh yeah, we have to
load your information and all this stuff.
We've lost your information. Who are you?
re-enter your name and all that stuff. Oh. And then Hakano is dumped back down into the school. Tsukumihara. Is that the same name as last time?
I think so.
I just can't
remember.
Maybe
I'm wrong.
I might be wrong.
But
we also get a mention of Seraph, the serial phantasm. Was that in the last game?
No,
I thought that terminology was new.
Yes. Yes.
I've heard it before, so I'm having a hard time placing if it's new or not. But serial phantasm is pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good extension of Marvel Phantasm and Noble Phantasm. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's shortened to Seraph.
Yes. I love the intro to CCC, like the very, very intro.
Yeah.
Because it is recognizably related to Extra, but distinct in a bunch of ways.
Expand on that.
Hakano... Oh, right. I need to open up your notes. Hakano walks up to the gate and is expecting an inspection.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens at the beginning of Fate Extra.
Mm.
And Issei is still there. He's still there looking at all the students coming in. And
right. Is that when you pick your genders that during the inspection last time?
Oh, yes.
But now you've pre-established your gender before showing up.
Uh-huh. And Issei is like, why did you expect an inspection? That's weird.
She says it's Public Morals Awareness Month.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I don't know what Public Morals Awareness Month is, but I'm here anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and can you lock the storage closet on the first floor?
Yeah.
Which is like, wait, that was the entrance to the arena.
Yeah, I was wondering where that exactly was, because there's also the other closet I was thinking of was the... There's the entrance to the arena, the grinding area, and there's the entrance to the death game kill each other arena. So I was wondering which one of those it was, but either one is weird.
Yeah. And so you run around the school, which is basically the same. You can't go in the church yet. Ooh,
we do get one other fun thing from Issei. He says that a bunch of new people have just joined the staff, and it's been a lot of trouble for the student council, and how if more people were level-headed like Hakano, him and the girl in the infirmary, that's emphasized.
In charge of the infirmary.
Yeah. Would have a easier time.
Mm-hmm.
We remember last time Sakura runs the infirmary, and she gives you a sweet lunch, which I remember using for the final boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
As Hakano enters the building, we start hearing from our servant, like glitchily calling out to us, which is also interesting. And also, Hakuno doesn't appear to remember any of the events of Extra, and doesn't and has a command spell which seems to be siphoning off strokes.
Well, I think those two are the. Wait,
are they they're leaving, right? They're being spent, or are they coming?
I read that as you have to spend at least one stroke during the story, right? Of Extra.
Yes.
Because we know that it's not the first week of the Shinji talks about knowing what happened. I think even Rin and Ronnie reference having fought Hakuno.
There is some like blurriness of what's going on. No one seems to Rin and Ronnie might remember, but Shinji mm-hmm. especially doesn't seem to be totally clear. Leo doesn't either when we see Leo.
People have moments of clarity.
Yes, they're like phasing in and out of remembering. It is very much a for some reason we've been reset to day one, which is interesting mm-hmm. because to my knowledge, pretty much all of these characters died.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I guess what is dying?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
For all I know, they aren't actually the souls of those people anymore. They are all NPC copies like Hakuno, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Or they've been salvaged in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Rescued before being deleted, which is interesting. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Command spells are coming up. The strokes are moving around. Mm-hmm. Are they not being spent?
Maybe they are. Mm. But I read that as like, oh yeah, I had three and then lost two.
Interesting.
Yeah. During the course of Extra.
You think they're being it's being remembered that she spent two of them.
Yeah, I could be
okay.
wrong.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we'll get some more clarity. It is kind of ominous though. She's like, mm-hmm. what's up with this? Anyway, eventually we make our way to the storage room, which was the arena entrance, and what do we find in the storage room?
We find a locker that is jiggling around, jiggling. Making noises. We find Jinako is so funny.
Jinako or Jinako.
Yeah.
Her
Jinako.
Yeah, it's a very creative username. Jinako is a cute, frumpy, yeah. A little bit frumpy. Her hair is mm-hmm. kind of a mess. Girl, woman?
Woman. How old is she?
In a yellow shirt and a sweater. Mm-hmm. She has a little bow in her hair and glasses. The game makes a lot of jokes about how fat she is. She doesn't really look at all different than the regular girl model, except her boobs are maybe bigger. Maybe she has a little more hip, but she's yes. not very... She's yes. not very...
I think she has more hip and thigh.
I can't fit in a locker because of my massive, massive fat body, which is the way they talk about her.
Yes.
But she's cute. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? She has been squatting in this storage room.
Yep.
The storage room, this is what it looked like in the prologue before you got your servant. It was filled with mannequins, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. yeah. So it's back to there. But
there was a mannequin?
There's a mannequin, yeah. There's no like entrance to go further. It's just mm-hmm. a normal room. She's like sleeping, set up a bed on gym mats and mm-hmm. is like hiding out in here.
She's an elite neat.
An elite onito is really funny. And she is a substitute teacher.
Hakuno is like, I don't think that's true.
But, and this is another like Hakuno. I like Hakuno, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think her personality is pretty light, but I do think that she's funny. Right here, she's like, I'm not even on the student council. This is not my problem. Here, strange woman who's possibly broken into this room. Here's the key. Lock up after yourself so that no one knows anything is wrong.
Uh-huh. If you were playing as Jinako, you would get a like her holding the key above her head. She would absolutely... da-da-da-da!
Jinako posts. She's a poster.
Mm-hmm.
Poster in the sense of she's on Twitter or whatever. Whatever extra Twitter is.
She's on that BBS.
Mm-hmm. She like makes a lot of like internet jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And she thanks Hakuno for giving her the key and says, it's not going to change the ending, but make sure to fight with all you got, which is ominous. Now, Hakuno leaves this room and after heading towards the stairs so we can finally head up to our class, she's instantly killed by a nun with huge knockers.
This is we later find out, Fujimura Taiga. We all know that Taiga is a nun with huge boobs, right? The horniest nun you've ever seen.
This is interesting because she doesn't really look... She doesn't look like Taiga, but it's kind of hard to tell because how covered up she is.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really act like Taiga at all.
No.
So either Taiga has had a real image change, or it's another case of someone impersonating her, like... remember when Julian... Is Julian or was it Julius?
Julius.
When he was impersonating Kuzuki, and you were like, that's not Kuzuki, unless yeah. Kuzuki turned into like a like reedy little twink.
Uh-huh.
Unknown at this point, but she's wearing specifically a Buddhist nun costume, mm-hmm. which is surprisingly close to the Catholic nuns, which I mm-hmm. think is interesting. But the main way you can tell the difference, I guess, is that the wimple is all white for Buddhist nuns.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she falls on Hakuno with her massive, massive titties and smothers her for a little while moaning and talking about how rough Hakuno is being with her.
Okay, to be fair, Hakuno just digging into that ass.
She just kind of going for it. This is like, this is classic, this is written for men, assuming mm-hmm. that you're a male character playing this, right?
Yes.
But it is funny that girl Hakuno is also just grabbing on and exploring that butt.
Coining the term magnifimeat.
Magnifimeat is awful. She should be killed for that one.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, this woman is wearing... Well, she's wearing a Buddhist nun costume, like, outfit, but it's slit so high up on the side
yeah.
to the point uh-huh. of ridiculousness.
You can almost tell what color this character's panties are.
Yeah, Taiga's panties are. Yes, if she's wearing any, given how...
Uh-huh, yeah.
Finally, she realizes that Hakuno is dying beneath her and releases her, just in time for Hakuno to find out that Leo is watching disapprovingly.
Yep.
I'm not over the moon about seeing Leo again, but, you know, he's fine. Little twerp. Your opinion has changed about Leo since Extra, yes?
Yes. there are some characters in this game who... Well, okay, yeah, there's one...
I know that you fought me during the 24-hour podcast about about Arkweed's master in Extra. You put him in, like, S tier.
With Catherine's support.
Yeah, I know. Well, okay. This is the thing, is that I would totally believe, based on how friend of the pod Catherine's, like, behavior around weirdo male characters are, I would believe that she would just put him in S tier because of whatever nonsense he
has
in Extra.
Nothing going on in Extra.
Yeah, lots of guys who are kind of weird have nothing going on in games. Catherine loves them.
Okay. No.
You, though, I know something must happen because you like him now.
Yeah. He is emblematic of several characters from Extra reappear in CCC and get very different roles.
I can't wait for little Ronnie to show back up and get her glow up.
And some characters are missing because they didn't know what to do with them. Some characters, it feels like they looked at and were like, unsalvageable.
Hakuno finally makes her way to her class and bumps into her good friend Shinji. If we remember from last time, this is Mato Shinji, who is doesn't actually have a sibling.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that in the last game, that Sakura is like set up as his sibling, but in the real Shinji does not have a sibling. And also yeah. he's like seven. He's a 7-year old. He's like a young genius gamer.
Yeah.
He's like a baby.
Yeah. Yep. We actually get a little bit of like why they're friends.
Yes.
Rather than just the like, well, yeah, of course you're friends with the worst man alive.
Yeah.
He does seem, he is also, I will say, nicer to Hakuno
mm-hmm.
in this than he is in, like, Extra. He shows up and starts being mean to Hakuno immediately.
Yeah.
And this is like friendly banter.
Yeah. This
more
is a couple...
so than, oops, sorry. More so than like being a jerk.
There's a couple softening of him, right? He mentions mm-hmm. Rin later, and Hakuno is like, I thought she turned him down. He's not really the type to bother a woman again if they turn him down. I'm like, wow, That's so different than Fate Stay Night Shinji.
Uh-huh.
Because again, he's not the same guy. He just looks like him mm-hmm. and has the same name. And also, well, he's not related to Sakura, but... They talk about a BBS called PJ, the Peace Journal. Peace.
PJ.
Peace is a piece as in like a piece of something, but that's also twice Peaceman's name.
Yes.
So that seems notable.
Yep.
Because he, despite wanting peace on Earth, he is also peace like a piece of thing, something, not like Peaceman like a Death Stranding character.
Mm-hmm.
let's see. Hakuno talks about Leo.
Right.
She knows who Leo is already.
The three of them are friends.
Yeah, they're friends. Leo is very judgmental about the whole thing with Taiga in the hallway.
Yeah.
Hakuno thinks that there is some kind of experience that the three of them went through that brought them closer together, made them able to understand each other despite their differences. Can't remember what, though.
Yeah. I wonder what that was, Hakuno.
Also, on the PJ system, there was... rumors about the Holy Grail War.
Yeah, they briefly mentioned, like, so what would you do with a wish? Mm-hmm. And Hakuno gives roughly the same answer from Extra.
Yeah.
Or Hakuno does not...
It's kind of a Shiro answer, right? Which is like, there's lots of things I could ask for, but nothing that I couldn't get myself. Well, so I feel weird using a wish on it.
Yeah, there's an interesting bit where she's like, the way it's phrased makes it sound like a wish that you couldn't get any other way. Everything I want is just, I just have to work for it.
Let's see. Leo kind of seems to be closer to realizing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But Julius is also apparently still around.
Mm-hmm.
Shinji does some whining. He's the number two gamer in the world. He does some whining about the mysterious person who has nothing but time on their hands, who's the number one gamer in the world, the dastardly Jin Akeo.
I sure wonder who that is.
I wonder who that could be. I love that she says her screen name out loud as if you wouldn't get it from uh-huh. her name being Jin Akeo and the gamer rival being Jin Akeo.
Yep.
But anyway, it's time for class. The bell rings and in comes Fujimoto Taiga.
Yeah.
In her nun costume.
Yep.
Everyone's pretty rattled by this, especially because everyone was expecting Taiga, the whirlwind, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
However, as soon as she enters the room, it seems as if the memory of the original Taiga is like, as if that's a different person, right? It's like they've met Taiga for the first time and this is her, but they were expecting something different, but they don't quite remember.
Yeah, but there's also a bit later where Hakuno talks about, oh yeah, Taiga came in and tripped as usual.
Yes, yes, yes.
And like, she didn't.
she
tripped down the stairs onto Hakuno, but not coming into the classroom.
Yeah, yeah, it's as if as soon as this Taiga is not in the room, it's as if the cover story takes back over. But mm-hmm. when she's in the room, yeah, that's Taiga.
Yep.
I don't know who it was who was always like clumsily bouncing around.
Uh-huh.
There's something really interesting in Extra, the way that the status quo from Stay Night is like instrumentalized as a default position, right? The big like Taiga introduction moment where she hits her head on the platform and like
mm-hmm.
falls unconscious, and it's like a specific event that occurs in time becomes an everyday occurrence here because it's just looping.
Yeah,
it's really uh-huh. interesting.
Yes, yeah, the Moon Cell is fascinating because it is both the most powerful computer known to existence. It can grant any wish, and
it's not very creative.
yeah, it can't. It requires input for the wishes.
Yeah,
right. Like it can't. Imagine anything.
Right, like you're like, oh, but like coming up with the death game thing, it must have come up with something. And then you remember that at the end of Extra, it's revealed that no, it just invited someone, whoever came up first just got the wish, and Peaceman invented the death game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He
knows a lot about command spells, you know.
Yeah.
So he's able to change all of the rules.
Taiga locks eyes with Hakuno.
Starts like, talking about their passionate, heated embrace in front of the class.
Yep.
Real mouth on this lady.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Okay. If you're playing along.
Yeah.
We will probably not talk about most of them because it's hard to in a format like this, but you should talk to everyone and then talk to them again, because every chapter, basically every NPC has two pieces of dialogue.
Are they evolving storylines like before?
I'm trying to remember. I think, like, maybe some of them. I'll try to keep notes on that. They are, but I don't think all of them are.
Okay. So I will make an effort to talk to them, but we won't be writing them all out the same way that we were last time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
One second. Again, maybe I'm just wrong, but make sure to talk to everyone twice again, because I think most characters in Extra only had one thing to say, but I remembered, like, halfway through the prologue, right, everyone has two things to say.
Yes, yes.
Now, there's a crazy amount of dialogue that you could just miss if you ignore the NPCs.
I may have missed a couple people's second dialogue, because I also realized that partway through, but, you know, I will do it now, now that I remember. I did, like, search the school looking for any changes or anything like that. You can't get into the commissary, the lunchroom yet or anything like that. But it was funny when I went to the broadcast room and she's like, we're definitely going to use this once before graduation, right?
Yeah.
Now, class goes on. And Hakuno leaves, someone familiar appears. Who appears?
It's Ronnie.
Ronnie the seventh? Is that her title?
And Ronnie immediately is mad about Hakuno being 7 months, 8 hours, and 12 minutes late.
To wake up. Interesting. Hakuno recognizes her and has a cover story for who she is, but also recognizes that her clothes are weird, given that she has, like, a big diamond revealing her boobs on her, like, cutout on her stomach. And also, Ronnie doesn't seem to be under any illusions about what is going on. She's also very different than usual, I would say. She's mad. She's mad at Hakuno and expressing that in a way that she just really doesn't in Extra.
I think I would not say that Ronnie is not under any illusions about what's going on. I think that's right. Because she says, like, you're late, and Hakuno says, what for? And Ronnie's like, I don't know.
Oh, right.
But I'm mad at you for being late. I know you're late for something. I just can't remember what for.
Ronnie orders her to get her shit together and walks off and then vanishes as she walks. Because she's too anomalous to, like, really be contiguous in Hakuno's line of sight.
And then Hakuno's like, was I just talking to someone?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's probably fine. I'm going to go.
It's the forgetting who she is after she walks away that makes me think that she's more aware of what's going on than Leo or Shinji, because she's being quarantined, right?
Yes.
But there's still something. Yeah, I think something's going on.
Ronnie and Rin are more aware of what's going on, but there's still a, like, double think there of they know enough to say some stuff, but also then immediately forget why they said that.
Ronnie also makes a waiting for Godot joke.
Yes. Okay,
she makes a joke about a certain Samuel Beckett.
Yes, and then later just says, waiting for Godot.
By the way, it was waiting for Godot in case you didn't get that, you fucking stupid idiot. Another interesting thing I noticed walking around was that there is a number of events around the school that are cherry blossom themed, that are Sakura themed, even though it is not cherry blossom season, and everyone's a little confused about that. That's a funny joke. We will find out why later.
Yeah.
This is when Shinji pops up to complain about Rin, says that she's in the courtyard. Hakuno decides to go and check on her. Before she can get there, her command seal bugs out again, and we hear Nero talking to her, and also she's feeling a drag to fall back asleep, basically. Like the call of like some kind of ominous rest.
Right, yes. If a second seal gets spent here, then that's definitely getting spent.
I think it's getting spent. My read on this was that the command spells are being unconsciously used to pull Nero closer. That's kind of what I thought.
You're probably right.
Like my presumption was that she was just reset with three of them for whatever reason, and now is like subconsciously trying to summon her servant. Pretty far away if it takes multiples, I guess. Let's see. Hakuna goes to the courtyard to meet Rin, who immediately starts hollering at her for stupid nonsense Rin reasons. Hakuna oogles her legs for a little while and gets called on it. Again, it's like it's clearly like written for a male perspective, and also assuming that you are a boy, both playing it and playing as a boy.
Yes.
But Hakuna casually like oogling at women's legs is also really funny when you remember when you can keep her absolute blank face stare in mind. Hakuna is confused by Rin's like standoffishness. Rin stomps away and then disappears from her consciousness. Hakuna decides to leave and bumps into another strange event.
Sakura is laying on the floor in front of the shoe lockers, and no one seems to notice. Yeah, people are just walking by.
She appears to be in a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. She's in her lab coat, her like nurse's outfit. Nurse costume. No. Nurse's office outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Not a nurse outfit. She's just wearing a lab coat. But yes, no one seems to recognize that she's there, and she's calling out for help, and no one's responding.
Mm-hmm.
There's some choices. I don't think they really changed. I didn't call out to her. I just ran over to help because, you know, Hakuna's a girl of action. If there's a girl in trouble, she's got to go touch him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hakuna picks her up and is like, "Wow, this girl's fucking sexy."
Yeah. I think the difference here is whether you run over to her and like just hold her, or run over to her and be like, Sakura. Yeah.
Let's see. Sakura is surprised that an ordinary student who's not even a student council member was able to see her. Hakuna doesn't really process that. She calls Hakuna senpai and asks if she will take her to the infirmary and spend a little time with her.
Mm-hmm.
This progress of time screen, this is different,
glitching,
right?
Out.
Oh, okay.
Or yes, it is different from Extra.
Right, because Extra had a similar looking UI, but it was sort of like evening, day, night. And this has that too, but there's also this like percentage progress of time bar, which is interesting. But yes, also the evening, day, night thing is starting to like, it looks like it's like a frozen frame of a fire, like digitally artifacted, basically, is what it looks like.
Well, it starts off, the percentage of time starts off like normal looking.
Yeah.
And this is when it becomes like corrupted.
Yeah. They go to the infirmary. Sakura takes a nap. Her hair is so long. It's hard to tell
like
an Extra.
Ground length.
Yeah. It's hard to tell an Extra because she's like always sitting, basically. Mm-hmm. There's very few scenes where she's up and about. But yeah, her hair is so long. Eventually, she wakes up. Her fever is broken. She has a lot of gratitude towards Hakuna and says that the atmosphere of the school changed and it affected her.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. She also talks about...
This is where we get the bit of Hakuna just like talks about her normal everyday.
Yeah.
And talks about Taiga tripping and, you know, a bunch of things that didn't happen, but
yeah, the cover
did happen in Extra.
Yeah. Sakura mentions how lonely that she gets in the infirmary because all she's supposed to do is look after the health of the students, but all of the students are capable of managing their own health because they're, you know, contestants in the war and they're taking care of themselves. So there's very little opportunity for her to do anything or talk to anyone. It must get very tiresome having people pop in, grab lunch, and then leave.
Yeah. You know?
But yeah, it seems... Spending time with Hakuna like this seems to bring her to the verge of tears, even as she tells Hakuna that she has to leave since the bell's ringing.
Mm-hmm.
Before Hakuna can make it out of the building, her command spells activate one last time. And something strange happens.
Sure does.
What happens?
Let's see. The screen gets glitchy, or... It's foggy, almost. The same way that this effect was used a couple of times.
It's like
Extra.
A red haze, basically.
Yeah. And a school announcement starts playing, warning all remaining intelligent beings that they've run out of time. The Holy Grail War has been sold off and all of you along with it.
That's a really great line. And then there's sort of a spreading poison,
yes,
basically, like a digital poison. Mm-hmm. There are these ominous... We didn't see anything like this in Extra.
No.
They are, I would say, notably, a bit reminiscent of a certain type of monster from Fate Stay Night. They are like black shapes with long strip-like hands.
Mm-hmm.
They have like eyes in a way that the shadow monsters from Heaven's Field don't really have eyes, I don't think. But the limbs are reminiscent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They are latching onto people and basically causing the same effect that happens if you lose the duel at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to like purple digital rot away.
Yep.
A flood of them is appearing. The bit where the like doors to the school like burst open and the flood comes in is really great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
We're in the digital sea, Ben. It is like the school building is underwater and the water pressure finally breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And
is there noise or black noise?
Mm-hmm.
We played The World Ends With You. We know monsters to call noise before. Yeah. That's a fun one. Hakano is forced to flee from them. You can't get too close. You can talk to some of the people who are being consumed, but mm-hmm. you can't really do anything about it.
I like the scene with Shinji. It again is this Shinji is a different character.
Yeah, yeah.
We
get to see more of Shinji, the you know, 12-year-old gamer champion, and less of the fake Shinji Mato.
Yes.
You know?
He first is calling for help, and then when it's clear, Hakano grabs onto him and is like trying to pull him out. And when it's clear that's not gonna work, he like shoves off her hand and is like, yeah, that's right, leave me alone. Uh-huh. Like, you were too late, basically. But like accepting his fate, not trying to drag Hakano down with him.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, yeah, you go, save yourself.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things that happen here. One,
he calls out for Ryder.
He's upset because he's remembered everything, and just as he was about to be able to make use of that information, this happened. Mm-hmm. And he got caught off guard.
Mm-hmm.
Three, he's become part of the floor while being taken apart, which is really horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, he laments how unfair all of this is and disappears. Hakano makes it to the rooftop. The sky has been replaced with a dark static pattern. The entire world is dark. You know, mm-hmm. you can see the shapes of the buildings, but there's no light, you mm-hmm. know? And Hakano is starting to, because of her panic, is starting to be able to, like, see through the whatever, like, mind fog is happening here. She's, like, understanding what these creatures are and that they are overwriting the data of whatever they touch and turning them into more of themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's getting ready for a life or death situation, and then a new voice calls out to her, perhaps. A flirty, mean voice.
Yep.
The voice tells her that she is cocky for thinking that she could run away from her or the world. Is mm-hmm. an interesting way to say that. And apparently, this voice is the cause of all of the forgetting, and says that if Hakano just goes to sleep, she promises to give her the Grail. But she has to like. Be obedient and be a puppet.
I'm sure that should work out fine.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Sounds like a good deal, right?
We don't even get an opportunity for a bad end here. Hakano is like, hell no.
Yeah, Hakano is like, I'm fucking mad as shit.
Oh, that's what I've been feeling for the last half an hour, was just like overwhelmingly angry.
Uh-huh. She does a fun thing. She climbs up. She's like cornered on the roof, and she mm-hmm. climbs up onto the like stairwell top, basically, where the like antenna is and all that mm-hmm. stuff.
Where Rin was and the
And then makes a running jump for the chapel and falls into the dark.
Yep.
The voice gets very upset by the fact that she's going to try that, and Hakano begins to fall endlessly. in an enormous amount of time, or perhaps a few seconds pass. This is, it's hard for Hakuno to judge it, but it feels as if it's aeons, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She curses herself for acting rashly and not thinking more about the situation, wondering if there was another way to get out of there. But finally, our servant, Nero. Is calling out again.
Umu!
And there's a funny bit where she's like, call out my name, and Hakuno's like, Saber. And she's like, yeah, close enough. Yes, Nero's line of, if you're gonna fall, fall in love with me instead.
It's so good.
What a girl. Nero is like, I can't believe you forgot my name. I've never stopped thinking of you for a second, let alone forgot your goddamn name. Cute.
Poor Nero.
They hold hands. Saber says that she's been falling through an imaginary space, and that she's going to pull her back to the real world. Presumably still in the computer?
Yes.
But, like, out of this, whatever this is.
Yeah.
And then that's it. We've reunited with Nero. We have been confronted with a strange new enemy? Ominous person, at least.
Yeah.
And we've met some new a couple new characters and seen some old faces who, I don't know if they're going to still be around. Listen, I don't know if this was still kicking around.
If this was Fabula Ultima, we'd all be getting
Fabula points.
Fabula points, yes.
Yeah. A new villain.
A villain has appeared, yeah.
Shinji, I wonder if Shinji will still be around, but Leo did not appear in that sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably he's fine. Obviously, Ronnie and Rin aren't going to get caught by that.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see.
We shall see, indeed.
That's all we got.
Yep. Yeah.
Not too much happened, but it is interesting.
We get the chapter beginnings are interesting, but we turned off the game before we got those. Because, helpfully, the game is like, hey, do you want to save? And you're like, yeah, sure. You always save when a game asks you, do you want to save? And then
living that one save lifestyle. Self-enforced Iron Man on everything.
A scroll pops up. It's like chapter one, and then you close the game because we're only covering the prologue for the second.
Yes. It started playing a cutscene or something like that, mm-hmm. but I was good and I turned it off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, well, tragically.
Yes. Hmm? Yes. Just thankfully, you have a save right there. It's nice. It's mm-hmm. convenient. It's not. I often save on chapters mm-hmm. in visual novels and various other things, but usually it is okay, I've gotten to a place I can save. I can drop a save here. And it's like kind of at the beginning of the chapter, not, like literally load into the chapter.
The biggest tragedy of CCC so far is that Fen's Vita finally died.
Yes. It was on its last legs when Ben played extra, but it is,
mm-hmm.
I cannot get it to charge now.
Yeah, so I have to use my big laptop-shaped Vita. In order to play it.
Yep.
Which has been less convenient for me, but I'm excited to play more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. I'm excited for next time.
Yeah.
We're gonna like get into it next time.
Yeah, yeah. We'll
at least a little bit
more to talk about.
Yes.
It's an interesting setup, though. I'm happy to see Hakuno again. Nero is charming as ever.
Yep.
We didn't watch videos of this.
Nero was in her normal outfit.
Yes, she was in her normal outfit. Hakuno's been in her normal outfit the whole time. I'm not sure when that will change, but presumably. It would be interesting if Nero showed up in her bondage costume.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. Finally, I managed to get a hold of you, Hakuno. Yeah, no, I was at an orgy. I couldn't change. I had to come right away. Yeah, but I'm having fun so far. I was very tempted to continue playing, but I would never do that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff going on. What are you thinking about?
I'm
like looking off.
I'm
giggling about something.
I'm looking at the video that Catherine uploaded. I feel so bad for not watching it before now. I had a busy morning.
For the other servants?
Yes. Caster says, it's been a while. Even if the moon would let you fall into the netherworld, I, the sun, will not.
Aww.
Which is good. I don't care what Archer says. I know.
we shouldn't read what Gil says. There shouldn't be Gilvin.
No. Because we're going to see. Yes. Yes. Catherine knows that we're both doing Saber. Yeah. So she's just including...
okay. Saber? Archer 2. Thank you very much. The sequel to Archer.
What?
Oh. I'm sorry. I thought you were calling Gil Saber.
No. I was saying, yes, we are both doing...
She's just Nero to me. It was so hard to call her Saber, because Saber is... Mm-hmm. Saber to me is blue. Saber is a blue
mm-hmm.
color.
Mm-hmm. yeah. Mamo is as wifed up as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You hold hands with your servant for a while, and then...
Yeah.
And then it ends.
Right, it's reminiscent of the end of the game, where you're like... just stuck in that space, fading away.
With her pink hair, fox ears, and foxtail, this is the servant of the Magus caster.
The ears and tail are real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's hard to beat the, if you're going to fall in love with me. Mm-hmm. Line. That's just stellar.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to Tamamo, but...
yeah, they all call you out for forgetting them.
mm-hmm. Yeah, I can, like, hear Archer. Can't believe you would forget someone like me. Whoa.
Oh, no. Sob. Tamamo's so sad.
Tamamo is funny, is the thing.
Yes. Yep.
Got anything else for me?
No.
How long do we discuss CCC for?
About an hour.
So this is going to be, like, a two-hour episode?
Yep.
Wow.
We're at, like, 2:17 now. I'm excited for dinner, if I'm being honest. I'm a little hungry.
Perfect. What do you want for dinner? Should we, like, talk about dinner to pad out our time, run time, so, like, people aren't disappointed?
We're part of the Abnormal Mapping Network. I want a burger, Ben.
You always want a burger.
Do I?
Yeah, you're always looking for burgers.
I feel like my stomach has been upset recently. And
yeah,
I feel like burger is one of the easier ways to avoid dairy.
Mm.
Even with lactate, I feel like dairy has been a trigger recently. So,
mm-hmm.
So like pizza's out. Yeah. I could go for a salad.
Hmm. We'll talk about it.
But well, I thought you wanted to talk about it on pod, Ben.
Well, you then started the outro, and also, if I'm going to be completely honest, dear listeners and Fenn. We've been recording with the AC off, but it's starting to get a bit sweaty in here.
That's fair. Where can people find you, Ben?
You can find me on Blue Sky at benends.itch.io. Despite all my ranting about Itch lately, I'm not planning on not stopping using Itch or anything like that. And you know, I feel like Itch is a... We didn't talk much about the how things have been going with the people acting against Visa and MasterCard and Stripe and all of that stuff. Mm. But, you know, Itch is on the correct side of that and has been mm-hmm. Pushing in good direction. So that's good. I'm glad to see that.
Yeah.
My frustrations aside, I'm not going to hold them against them forever, you know? Mm. As long as I can sell stuff on there, I'm happy. But yes, you can find me at my Itch account at the same place, benends.itch.io. You see the games that I make, etc., etc. Where can people find you, Fenn?
You can find me at fennec.moe, fennec.moe on Blue Sky. You can find the game that we made at Crying Rules, actually, at or cryingrules.itch.io.
Mm-hmm.
You can send in questions.
It's also linked from Ben Ends, too.
Ah,
so
yeah.
You can definitely get to it either way.
You can send questions to cryingrulesactually@gmail.com. We always want more questions.
Yeah.
Probably won't read it if there's not a question.
Mm-hmm.
Or
thank you for the nice email.
I will read it, probably. But
you know, out loud.
Yes, yes. Out loud into a microphone. What else do we say here?
moonarchive.art for
right schedule and stuff. moonarchive.art/cash, that's how you get to
is our
Patreon.
You can listen to us talk about the last season's anime finally, and are getting hype for this upcoming season's anime. You know, the cycle of hype where we get our kneecaps broken all the time, but this time there's so many good looking shows that at least a couple of them are bound to be good all the way through.
Yeah, I would be, yes, there's like, I would be shocked if Rory and City fell apart.
Yeah, they're just going to be... Yeah. You know, they're not going to be... Is there anything this season that I'm going to be like, wow, this is one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my entire life? Probably not. But is there going to be a new thing in my rotation of, oh, you should definitely watch this?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know that we really have much else. What are we covering next time?
Next time, we are covering Chapter 1 of CCC. Hooray.
Woo.
Crowd goes wild.
I'm going wild.
Some crowd favorite. Some returning faces in Chapter 1. Obviously, given that we've seen some already.
But, yeah. I know some characters who are in this game, but I don't know all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Nursery Rhyme and Alice make it back.
I thought you meant like there were characters in CCC that, not that you were going to be surprised were in CCC, that you were going to be surprised existed. And I was like, I think you know all of the characters in this.
Yeah, no. I don't think I'm going to be like totally caught out by anything. But there are some returning characters who may not be returning characters.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I don't think Arkweed's going to show up. Fenn's making a face. That would be so funny if Arkweed showed up.
Yeah. In addition to CCC Chapter 1, we are watching. I don't know why I was saying it like
we
that.
We are watching.
In the Mood for Love.
Have you seen any Wong Kar Wai films before?
Maybe, but not that I like knew of.
Interesting.
At the time.
I've seen Chungking Express a couple of times at this point because we watched it in college for a class, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really fun movie. And it's also one that's like, it's one of those art house films that I think is pretty watchable for like people who aren't into art house films.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, it's definitely... Art house encompasses all foreign media but that are not American, so...
I think... There's definitely, like Hong Kong action films are not... Would not go in the art house category for me.
Yeah.
I would definitely put Throw Away Your Books, Rally in the Streets.
It's definitely art house. Yes, I do think that, like, foreign is art. In American parlance, and thus discardable.
Yes.
aside from a couple things that avoid that tag, generally, I think that that's why places that call themselves art house theaters also just play popular movies from other countries and anime and stuff like that, because it's art to America because it's not American.
Yeah. I guess what I mean is
like a funny categorization problem.
There are like very specific things. Genres that break out of that, but yes, for the most part, I think you're correct.
Yes, I think like Jackie Chan movies are probably like not considered that, right? Because they have like got enough cultural cachet in America to just count as movies.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we're gonna do In the Mood for Love. I have never watched it. Chungking Express is the only Wong Kar-wai film I've seen, so I'm excited to see something new.
2000 film.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
Okay, in Chapter 1 of CCC, and maybe some Yuri Tea Time, I keep getting this confused. Maybe some Toxic Yuri Jam games, depending on how far I am in that list and how comfortable I feel like going through it all. Part of me wants to just hit it when the heat has died down a little bit, like hit it again with my full list completed, and then we can just do like a big episode doing all of it between the regular CCC and the True End route. Give us some more time to like play the True End route.
Yeah, I know.
It's a little like not topical anymore, but I do think that it's worthwhile to talk about independent games regardless of whether or not they're topical.
Yeah,
and also when have we ever been topical?
I'm happy to do an episode. I think at that point we're just talking about the games that we like really enjoyed and like have something to say about.
We'll do a lightning round of like short games.
Okay.
Because I do want to touch on the stuff that I played.
Okay.
But I'm going to be like, okay, it's not for me. Moving on.
Yes.
You know, because I do think, I don't want to pretend that I didn't play stuff that I didn't like.
That's fair.
And it's very rare that I play something and I'm like, I think that this is an evil game, right?
Yeah.
It's usually just like, oh, it's for an audience, not me.
Yes. I think, yes, a lot of my criticisms from last episode stand.
Yeah.
I've found some stuff that I've liked so far. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it would be nice to have it all in one place so we can just link people to that episode and say,
yeah,
hey, do you want to hear our thoughts on a bunch of Toxic Hero Jam games?
I think that's probably the best way to do it.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's wrap up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining.
We'll have guests again soon.
Yeah. Next episode, maybe.
Yeah.
Who could say? Not
maybe
me.
Maybe they don't show up.
Yeah.
You never know. Okay. Good night, Ben.
One day, let's meet again in the digital sea.
Figure out this. There are a few things that I want to work on when it comes to like production.
Mm-hmm.
One, breathing away from the mic when I'm not talking. Two, how do people say peas that don't pop as much? There's a way to do it. There's like a trick to doing plosives that reduces the amount of pop. Like a pop reduction.
We have an S reduction.
Different than pop, I guess.
Interesting.
Okay. You ready?
Let me pull up the... You can start recording whenever.
Okay, yeah. I have started recording.
And extraneous.
Oh my god. Listening to...
Once you listened for it, it's like...
I know. It's... Fuck.
See, the thing is that it's fine to do during speech, right? Because, you know, if we start paying attention to how many times we're umming, in my case, mm-hmm. it might make me talk slower and more deliberately.
Hmm.
You especially
know,
what?
You know what they say, Ben? Stuttering is ideology.
Yeah, that's true.
One second. Where is the...
I was thinking a lot about that at the end, where it's just like a scroll through characters.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, the camera is not smooth.
No.
Like,
sometimes it just stops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.